The following is a production of BYU Broadcasting in cooperation with the Brigham Young University Division of Continuing Education.
I've been saving shadows in my face, a gift from the trees. I've been saving rain clouds in my eyes, a gift from the sea. Such are the things I do to keep myself from telling you. That now everything is moving. Saving murmurs in my ears.
Our guest today on Thinking Aloud is Michael Hicks. He's the composer of the song we're listening to right now, and vocalist as well, and pianist.
Gift from the words I used to say to you.
So from the outset today, at least I hope you can see that he's versatile. But if this is the first you've ever heard the name Michael Hicks, then you still have no idea just how many facets there are to the man. Yes, he's a musician, a composer in all kinds of directions, but he's also a poet, an essayist, a biographer, a thinker, a seeker, an artistic adventurer. In some ways, he reminds me of a few lines from Shel Silverstein. Michael Hicks may well be a dreamer, a wisher, a liar, a hoper, a prayer, a magic bean buyer.
I've been letting go of the things I felt. Most other views I held. I'm letting memories melt. I've been saving whispers in my lips.
There's so much to Mike that I can only cherry-pick right now from his official resume, but I've got to do at least that to give you some sense for the diverse roads he has followed in life. His compositions have been performed across the country, pieces of all kinds, solo pieces, chamber pieces, music with and without words, conservative and experimental, accessible and less than accessible. He's the author of 3 books, all perfectly accessible if you can read, a biography of composer Henry Cowell, and 2 volumes titled Mormonism and Music, A History, and a book titled 60s Rock, Garage, Psychedelic, and Other Satisfactions. Michael Hicks is editor of the National Journal American Music, has contributed articles to the Encyclopedia of Mormonism, has been the recipient of the Morris S. Rosenblatt Award from the Utah Historical Society, the Francis and Emily Chipman Award of the Mormon History Association. He workshops with able poets, gets published in all sorts of ways, and seems to be the kind of person who will entertain all kinds of thought, as any good artist must. Today we'll get acquainted with Michael Hicks and one of his most recent offerings in the realm of art, a new CD titled Valentine Street. Visiting with Michael Hicks on today's Thinking Aloud.
I've been saving ashes on my tongue, a gift from the fire, and I've been keeping secrets from the dark, a gift to...
Michael Hicks, welcome to Thinking Aloud. A pleasure to have you here today.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Are you the kind of guy who can never be embarrassed by a long laundry list of accomplishments like that? We had to do it to you.
Oh, well, thank you.
I want to hear about your life history in a nutshell, so let's take at least 45 seconds. You started out as a classical guitar dabbler without musical instruction. You're self-taught.
Well, my dad, who was a railroad worker, bought me a guitar when I was 12, and I heard no classical music when I was growing up. I tried to play the blues and... I've been working on the railroad and things like that. But eventually listened to the Beatles and listened to experimental rock of the late 60s. The first classical music I remember hearing, at least, was The Rite of Spring. And that probably answers a lot of questions about my personality. And
you liked it, I trust.
I loved it, but it seemed like, you know, it was just that weird stuff like Led Zeppelin and the other things that I knew, the sort of electronic collages that you'd hear on psychedelic recordings and so on. So,
was it the weird aspect that you liked just per se, or the fact that it set itself aside from the norms and the conventional?
Well, I think it was both, and mostly that it was like something I hadn't heard before. And so there is that element of wanting to find something new, probably a restlessness inside me. So I've tried to pursue that the rest of my career, I suppose.
You eventually did have some formal training, some.
Well, I did have accordion lessons when I was 8 and then ended up with a doctorate in music composition years later. In between, I played music a little bit in high school, but it was mostly outside of music classes. But I did, when I was 15, write a piece for choir and orchestra, just sort of studied books at the library next to the high school and listened to a lot of music. And it's a very funny derivative piece where you can hear, oh, that's when he was listening to Wagner, that's when he was listening to Handel, and so on. And then eventually, after studying at Foothill College in California, came to Brigham Young University in 1978 and studied with Merrill Bradshaw, Dave Sargent, some of the, I think of as sort of the great landmark composers. I was very interested in Mormon music. I mean, and the notion of doing something in music with respect to excellence and uniqueness and that would reflect our faith. And to some extent, the adventurousness and the exploratory nature of a Joseph Smith and those who've followed on that same quest with him.
Now, you teach composition, you've studied composition, you compose all the time, and mm-hmm. yet in an interview I've read, you say that you're a little uncomfortable being called a composer.
Well, I am, because I really believe in the statement of Arnold Schoenberg that a composer is someone whose native language is music. They speak best in the language of music. And I think I speak best in English. But I do music, and I do compose. I actually liken this to a statement of Joseph Smith when he was asked in Nauvoo by someone who had just arrived, "Are you a prophet?" And he said, "I sometimes prophesy." And so people ask me, am I a composer? I like to say, well, I do compose. Uh-huh. But most of my career now really is involved with writing and editing and those sorts of things.
Well, this is a really nice bridge to the topic that we're going to discuss today, which is mm-hmm. your new CD, because Valentine Street, the title of this relatively new CD mm-hmm. from on the Tantera label mm-hmm. coming out of BYU, is a collection of songs that would... I don't want to slight your musical offering when you talk about music apart from words, but mm-hmm. without the words, you ain't got a product.
Right.
You're a wordsmith, and the crafting of words is so important to you. Mm-hmm. I want to know, with the song, for instance, we just heard, do you start with a melody, or do you start with the pen coming up with English words on paper? And not just English, by the way. There's some French dabbled here and there throughout.
Yeah. Well, I think any songwriter will say it depends. Sometimes a tune comes first and then some words with it. Sometimes they come together, sometimes the words first. I actually don't remember with that song in particular. These songs started as a project that was enjoined upon me by Murray Boren, who liked a lot of CDs that I had done, just sort of singer-songwriter things where I'm covering songs of other artists, and particularly songs that I thought people wouldn't know. So I would just occasionally make a CD and give it to friends, and he liked it, but he said, you know, you need to write your own. So in the first months of 2004, I guess it was, I wrote in a 6-week period, this is in February and March, I guess it was, 20 songs. He said, do it. And I would actually go to Murray and to other friends with the latest song and kind of workshop it with them, say, what do you think? And there were a few that got thrown out, and eventually decided to sort of pick the best based on what people had said.
How do you take that? How do you take that? When somebody says, that's trash, get rid of it.
Well, they're all nice people. And none of I would say none of them were trash, but some just didn't quite make the cut. And so I take it fine. You know, I'm a big boy now. I'm too old to be doing a lot of these kinds of songs in some ways, but also probably just about the right age. I mean, I did write songs when I was in high school, and over the years I've written occasionally, usually comic songs for events. But this was a new thing, so I just wrote really intensely and was into that genre for a while.
Let's listen to one of these pieces. It's called Every Good Boy. And this is, as I listened, I have to congratulate you, by the way, right now. Just this is a phenomenal artistic accomplishment, this entire collection.
Thank you very much.
And but having said that, certain things are going to make my cut that stand a little bit above the rest. And this Every Good Boy just hit me in such a way. And I want to share that with our listeners, and we'll talk about it a little bit.
Okay.
Sometimes, now that our common biography is done, I hear you're doing great since you moved to the city. And what about me? I heard you ask someone. We'll remember what our teacher taught us when we were quite young. Our teacher taught us that every good boy does fine. And that's how I've been doing, so don't you come and ruin it, 'cause baby, every time I see you, I can't feel how good I really am. 'Cause love is not blind. We're not a novel, we're just a short story. We're not a poem, we're just a line in a play. We're not a calendar, just a clock ticking over and over for just one day. So why should I still care about the attention that you pay? Our teacher taught us that every good boy does fine. And that's how I've been doing, so don't you come and ruin it, 'cause baby, you still shine. And when you're in my eyes, how good I am, I can't recognize. We're not a movie, just some. We're not a Broadway show, we're just the lights flowing like angels across the avenue. So empty and bright, so why do I still wonder what you're doing? Every night I've got to realize every good boy does fine. Oh, but what's a boy to do when he's still in love with you? So leave me far behind. Discern the good I have to learn since you're not mine.
One of our producers here just mentioned to me that reminds him of an old Linda Ronstadt song, What's New? And I suppose that the situation, the scenario, should be pretty clear, that you have people who come together, they share a life together, then they go their separate ways, and in the aftermath, you have memories, and you wonder, what happened to the other person? Is that a story you wanted to tell, or is that just a sort of like the pegboard on which to hang a song?
Well, all the songs on this CD are love songs. They're current love or lost love. This is really in, you might say, the troubadour tradition, which goes back for centuries of trying to really craft well lyrics that deal with one of those things, you know, the celebration of love now or the wistfulness about love of the past. and sometimes regret, sometimes loss, and so on. But at the same time, I mean, this song started with the notion, as you probably can tell, of that phrase, which, of course, is how typically children learn the lines on the staff.
Triple clef of the piano.
Yeah. And I thought, you know, that's an interesting sentiment. And I got to thinking about it, actually, when Lee Young Lee came here and did the forum several years ago. And he talked about that phrase and how he was asked by one of his children who had just learned the phrase, "Is that true?"
And this is a poet coming to BYU.
Yes.
And the phrase, "Every good boy does fine," is that axiomatic?
Yes. And he actually, well, he said, "Well, actually, it should be every wise child is sad." And I won't go into that because that was a sort of odd digression. But I thought, yeah, how would that work as a song? And how could I actually build a melody out of EGBDF, which, is, of course, is the tune that starts the chorus? Because I've never heard that used as a tune, nor have I ever heard the phrase used as the title for a song or as the hook for a song.
Sometimes genius consists of doing what should have been obvious to the whole world and yet has never been done.
Well, thank you for the observation and the compliment. But so, in other words, you think all these things you think about at the same time. I'm thinking about how would that be? Wouldn't that be interesting to do that? And I thought, well, I could do what Kate Bush does sometimes, where she'll have in a minor key song, she'll have the key chord, the tonic chord, B minor, and then move to the chord a whole step below it, also minor, which is a very odd thing harmonically, but it would work for this song. And at the same time, I thought about, okay, if every good boy does fine, who's the singer going to be singing to? And it's going to be sung to someone who he's trying to convince he's doing okay, because a lot of lost love songs are that way, saying, "I'm doing fine, but the subtext is, I'm still having a hard time." Mm-hmm. And so all these things come together, and of course they're based on your experience with life, but frankly, mostly based on your experience with songs and how they work and the themes that recur.
Why is it that so many popular songs, be they songs out of the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, maybe into the future, popular songs mm-hmm. have to do about relationships, human relationships?
Well, wow. I don't know. It's just, I think that song, you know, singing is just the voice, and the voice is part of who you are. I mean, when you even read silently, you're hearing your own voice in your head. And singing out loud is so connected to the heart. And, of course, I mean the heart in literary and metaphorical terms, the heart being the center of emotion. And it just doesn't get any deeper than love and those attractions to people and the need to connect.
You know, you teach at a school of music, mm-hmm. and the function of a school of music is often to disabuse young, fervent, emotional students of the idea that music springs from out of all of these human concerns that we've just been talking about. And you sort of take music and you put it on the dissecting table, mm-hmm. and you go about it very analytically, talking about form and analysis theory. How do you explain this contradiction that here you have music that speaks to people at that emotional level about relationships and the social concerns, and yet if you teach songwriting, how do you say, well, let's talk about the forms and does that make sense?
Well, you have to have both. I mean, you have to have the head and the heart in relationships as well as in music. you can't, if you go too much with one or the other, you're going to have problems. But, I mean, think about Bach even. I mean, you have Bach pieces that are very intellectual and really beg for analytical consideration, and they're dazzling in that way. But you have other Bach pieces that are really tender and really affecting, and you can take them apart, but you don't want to, because it's like, you know, taking apart a beautiful spider web or something. So it's both. And and there has to be both in musical training. But I will say that it was not until this time of my life, I mean, this was slightly before I turned 50, that I felt I could really do this, that I could write songs that were honest and were from the heart, but were crafted in a way that I would feel, if I could say, proud of, even though I had done that as a young person and occasionally, as I say, comic songs in the meantime. And so the time was right for me. Mm-hmm.
This is Thinking Aloud. I'm Marcus Smith, visiting with songwriter, composer, really nice guy named Michael Hicks, who is responsible for this CD, Valentine Street. And I'd like to talk in just a moment about a little something different. We're going to hear a few lines from Laws of Attraction. And I want to spend some time talking to you about the interplay in this CD of religious themes.
Okay.
And how that somehow intersects our lives of love and romance, and to what extent this is a religious inquiry, or are you using religion in a way to highlight something else? Laws of Attraction, a few lines from that.
Abraham walked till he ran into Moses, and Moses said, I got 10 things to say. Abraham said, can you get it down to the 1 or 2 main points? And Moses said, how about love is the way? 'Cause there's a million little lives like ours just looking for the story they're in. There's a million little worlds like this just waiting for life to begin. They just need a little oxygen. They just need a little hydrogen. They just need to learn how to obey the laws of attraction. The laws of attraction. Moses wandered till he ran into King David. David said, I got 100 songs to play. Moses said, can you just play me your top 5? And David said, number 1 is love is the way. 'Cause there's a million little lives like ours just looking for a story they're in. There's a million little worlds like this just waiting for life to begin. They just need a little oxygen. They just need a little hydrogen. They just need to learn.
Well, there's a sample from Laws of Attraction, and here, with my literary background, I see you're playing off these ideas of Moses had a law, or maybe there was the law of Moses was done away later when Christ came along, and yet the law of attraction is mm-hmm. supersedes these things in some way here, at least as a focus in this song. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, I actually think this is one of the more Mormon songs in the collection, in that, I mean, Joseph Smith talks about physical law and spiritual law and these sort of affinities being eternal and one in some way. And so I think you sense that in this song. And, of course, the idea of these characters sort of running into each other as though in historical time or in some, you know, metaphorical time span or something. I mean, I think that there's a lot of sort of Joseph Smith Mormonism in the concept of that song. And then, of course, Laws of Attraction, you know, we learn that as a term of physics, I guess. But it really is something that is not just a metaphor for the drawing together of hearts and souls. But I think in our faith, it is something that's somehow the same.
Throughout this collection of songs, love songs, mm-hmm. You have these religious images coming
sure.
up again, born again and miracles and resurrection. Mm-hmm. It's hard to live through mm-hmm. resurrection or something to that
mm-hmm.
effect.
Yeah.
Why do you do that?
Because that's part of who I am. I mean, I'm just, you know, I became a very religious person at about the same time that I got into music, actually. I grew up in a somewhat religious household. My father was a Baptist, my mom a Presbyterian, and I had a real, you might say, born-again experience in the evangelical sense about that time, about 1970. And so I'm just so entrenched in particularly the Bible. That's what I grew up with. But always I want to think about how can this be understood or thought of or spoken of or sung about in a different way. And so Born Again, I really, well, that song has a lot of meanings for me, but one was to just think about, well, what have I been born again to recently? Mm-hmm. And just saying, you know, it's always about a boy and a girl. And it's funny because actually I was in the temple shortly after recording that song and seeing these scenes of Adam and Eve and so on. And I was hearing that song in my head as a kind of soundtrack. I thought, yeah, it is all about a boy and a girl. And even when we go back to the oldest and the deepest and the most powerful stories and themes, that's what it's about. It's the coming together of a man and a woman,
or a
boy and a girl, yeah, in my song.
So maybe I've misread what the allusions are, that are religious allusions, mm-hmm, here, because I initially thought, well, maybe these allusions, these metaphors, being born again, being resurrected, are in the service of being a symbol for human relationships, as, mm-hmm, though there were some dichotomy there where you're actually saying they're one and the same.
I think so, although that particular song, Born Again, did come out of my having some serious health problems that created in my own life a kind of resurrection or just a new period of my life. So I was thinking in terms of born again and resurrection and so on, but always coming back to that it's all about a boy and a girl. And then, you know, the other things that I say, everyday people, amazing grace, and all the miracles you've got to face. In other words, the sort of dichotomy, yeah, of the light and darkness that go with miracles.
I'm going to squeak one more question in.
Sure.
The title, Valentine Street. We're going to go out on this piece, Valentine, yeah, Street, the title for the
sure
album.
Yeah.
It's spelled ST period for street.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a Saint Valentine.
Yeah.
And so is there, and was that by design?
Yeah, it was just to say, you know, I thought about Saint Valentine and, of course, Valentine's Day and so on. And I thought, well, what if you flipped it around and it was Valentine Street?
So I was right.
Yep.
About one thing, at
sure
least today.
No, you're right.
Michael Hicks, thank you so much for joining with us today on Thinking
Thank
Labs.
You for having me.
Pleasure to have you.
Thank you.
Saturday, we wrap the week up in bales while the neighbors put on the Canterbury Tales. Our house is like a deep freeze, and here comes the mail. Brochures on disease.